Hell, I can find out the temperature your zombie tick at in that chair if I really want to know. Hello and welcome to episode 475 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
And hello, I'm Scott.
And before we get to this week's movie, we got a voicemail from Bodo. I'm not going to edit it in, but he just wanted to let us know that he's back. He was away for a while dealing with some health issues, but he's okay for now. Hopefully for good. But yeah, he's back listening again. Welcome back, Bodo. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you, man.
And on to this week's movie, which is from 1985, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Faking a Death. Movies and TV in the 80s made it seem so easy.
And also brought to you by Yellowface. Think it's okay for a quick funny bit in your film? Try using it on one of your main characters. For that racist fortune cookie dialogue, try Yellowface today.
Just might get you a Golden Globe nomination. It did in this case.
No.
All seriousness, yes. Joel Grey got a Golden Globe nomination for this movie. We'll get more into detail on that later.
Yikes. All right. So we have Officer Freddie Mercury on the beat at the beginning of the film, who stumbles into a fight. But of course, the first tip off was that they seemed to disregard his cop car sitting there in the middle of the alleyway, and then they seemed to ignore his lights, and then they, So, of course, it was all a setup just to get him somehow.
And it's a white cop saving a black guy getting beaten up by two white guys. I mean, it was science fiction from the start.
But it wasn't just enough to, like, get him and capture him. No, they push his car off the dock for some reason and fake his death. And it's just to enroll him in this covert domestic operation to eliminate, you know, undesirable targets that, you know, in this day and age, watching this, if that makes you if you're comfortable with this still concept, still yikes.
He was recruited by a shadowy government organization to be an assassin.
Yeah. Assassination of domestic
terrorist, essentially.
Not even. Just people that were
problems.
Yes. It was super vague. Because the guy that you know, that does become the main bad, you know, heavy here. Right. Is a defense contractor who's just bilking the government for making bad products, and rather than firing him, the answer is to assassinate him. But of course, the best way to do that is to take an unwilling subject and fake his death and draft him into this organization and just pretty much assume he's going to go along with it. He gets a mentor, the aforementioned Yellowface.
Joel Grey as a Korean nationalist. And when I say Korean nationalist, I don't mean a person from Korea. I mean a nationalist who is Korean. He's constantly talking about the superiority of Korean people.
Right. So, the whole thing.
Who is a master of this fictional martial art.
Whole other level of uncomfortability by talking like all of these racial, you know, topics, but for like pretty much two white guys to talk to each other about. I was like, what? All right. So he's trained in this art of this, and this is pretty much the only training he's getting, is just this martial arts training, to become this assassin. He isn't getting any other like weapons training or any gadgets or anything like that. No, it is just this martial arts training. And he runs into some off-brand Bond villains. Instead of Jaws being a really big guy with silver teeth, it's a dude that just smiles
very creepily
with diamonds on his teeth that you can see in some scenes. They have a number of run-ins with them. There's this, of course, plucky do-gooder army. What was she, a lieutenant? I forget now.
Captain, I think.
Captain.
Played by Kate Mulgrew when she was 29, 30. She was never young.
Yeah, between she, you know, was kind of between the soap opera and Star Trek right here. And so she's, of course, noticing the bad shit going on by this defense contractor and seeing that what he's producing isn't good. And then she gets caught in the middle of it, of course, because she's trying to be a whistleblower. And they all have more run-ins and hilarity ensues.
Now, the movie does start with some nice cinematography of New York City.
Yeah.
But then we see Macon, the original identity of Fred Ward's character, title character. I forget his rank, but officer, probably just officer, Macon.
Yeah.
And it's just Fred Ward with a cheesy mustache and his hair slicked back.
It was such a fake mustache. Whoever did the makeup for this film should be arrested for stealing themselves.
Yeah.
Because they did a horrendous job on a lot of, you know, including Chun.
And he happens upon this setup, you know, that's intended to draft him. And I've seen better fight choreography in a Three Stooges movie. I did like the forcing his car into the water. That was unexpected.
Yeah.
And that they got the name Remo Williams from his bedpan.
You know, that fight scene in the beginning was actually one of the better fight scenes in the movie, actually. Mm-hmm. That's saying a lot. In fact, it was the movie seems like they hired a fight choreographer for the first two fights and then let him release them afterwards.
And, I mean, Fred Ward's a good actor.
Yeah. But
the man cannot move. When he's trying to pull off the same choreography that Gray does earlier, which looked amazing when Gray did it.
Yes.
He is so awkward. And lumbering. And we have yet another action hero from the 80s who was a Vietnam vet.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was a trope.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, last week I'd mentioned to you that there was a song on the soundtrack that was really all I knew of this movie because the video was on MTV all the time. A Tommy Shaw song called Remo's Theme, What If. It's the one pop song that is just shamelessly crowbarred in after he leaves the hospital.
Right, he's playing this in the ambulance, kind of, as he's making his escape. So, you know, the funny thing is, you messaged me about how mediocre the film is.
Back in on the Tuesday afternoon show, we did a bit called the Mediocrity Hall of Fame. Actually, I should say you did a bit. It was your whole thing.
Yeah.
And I messaged you saying we should bring it back for this movie.
I feel you are overselling it.
What I have in my notes that I had to post on social media, this movie is the cinematic equivalent of the definition of nondescript.
I feel that is overselling this movie.
I've never seen anything more generic. I mean, I could appreciate it as an art piece if it was a deliberate like deconstruction of 80s action
right.
movies. It would be an easy five, but that's not what they were going for.
I feel you're totally overselling the movie, though, by saying this is mediocre.
You mentioned Bond.
Yeah.
The film is based on the Destroyer pulp paperback series featuring the character Remo Williams. Orion Pictures, a studio run by the people who had launched the James Bond series at UA, was open about their vision for the film, seeing it as the first in a series that would create a red, white, and blue collar Bond. To that end, they hired veterans of the Bond series to work on the film. Director Guy Hamilton had worked on Goldfinger and Live and Let Die, and screenwriter Christopher Wood had done Moonraker and The Spy Who Loved Me.
Oof, and that Moonraker, I don't know.
Moonraker was at least fun.
Yeah.
And batshit insane. But this is, to me, this was just, you know, it was your basic action movie. In every possible way.
I think you're still overselling it.
Well, I think this comes down to... I was thinking about this the other day. It's surprising that we're talking. Got an opportunity to talk about it on air. The reason I think that I tend to be the easier grader is we start in very different places. You start at a zero and add for the positives. Yes. I start at 2.5 and adjust accordingly.
So I think there's two things. There's a premise that they went on. Did they think people just wanted more James Bond? Or do they think that people...
Average Joe James Bond.
Or do they think that people in the U.S. wouldn't have seen the James Bond movies already that they're obviously ripping off?
I think they thought that an American average Joe James Bond blue-collar guy would sell.
And the second, there's a reason why we've never had a movie. Well, I don't know. The later James Bonds I'm not familiar with. But before this, we'd never really had a James Bond in training movie. I don't think we've really done that since either. And
actually, I've even listened to the first book, and it was well after his training.
Right.
We'd never had the origin story, as far as I know.
There's a reason why you wouldn't start with it. Because you don't really care about the character that being trained, you know? Yeah. So this is a prequel for something that didn't happen yet. Like, we'd only care about this if we had seen him as his, you know, fully trained self and wondering, how the fuck did he learn all this stuff? Well, you know, what you know, really made him into what he was when we saw him at the height of his powers? But we didn't see that. We're just seeing this dude being trained that we really don't care about that much about.
I think they also overestimated the popularity of the books.
I'd never even knew this was a book series. Same. Until now. Like, I'd never heard of this.
In the comments of that comment, I posted on social media, someone said they're a big fan of the books, but they were really disappointed that the movie was so horrible.
Yeah.
But just to put a point on Joel Grey's character, just getting back to him for a minute.
Yeah.
The man got nominated for a Golden Globe for playing what is basically a racist version of Yoda.
Yeah. Man, yeah, that was rough. That was really rough.
I gotta give it credit, that scene where he jumps up to the top landing, there are all these kind of, you know, poles that he has to jump up to and balance on to get up to the top landing in his apartment. They didn't do a montage.
I thought they were getting to that too.
And then it's the one thing that wasn't generic about it. There was no montage. I did appreciate that.
They stopped short of a montage.
And they waited 45 minutes just to get to the actual villains.
Yeah. It's... So I think the main culprit of why this is a really bad movie, though, is the script itself. Mm-hmm. The script itself is...
The cast is solid as hell.
You know, cast could have delivered something pretty good. I don't know if their direction was very good either.
I mean, one of the Bond directors, and one of the Bond writers, too, I don't know. Fred Ward, maybe not the guy you want in an action role, particularly anything martial arts, but beyond that, damn good cast.
Kate Mulgrew looked too happy in inexplicably places. Like, he's like, is she special needs? Like, does she not understand what's going on here?
And again, she's a great actor, but she just wasn't delivering here.
That is totally a director's fault.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a director would see her acting inappropriately and say something. No. The director told her to act like this.
Yeah.
That is easily... I mean, I don't even have to be on set to know that. Or just saw it and said, hey, why the hell not? She's amused by this. You know, maybe the paycheck is good and she's just... Who gives a shit about it?
Yeah. I was surprised they never put Chun in danger. Like, to bait him. I was expecting that to happen. Also, in the scene when Chun is shooting at the cabinets to get him to dodge, to test him, the cabinets might have been empty, but what about the neighbors?
Ah, it's New York in the 80s.
Mm. Speaking of New York, there's a line about New Yorkers having manners. Now, I'm not saying, you know, people in Jersey do, but really?
Yeah, it's, you know, kind of a hack joke. I don't think Chun was supposed to be Yoda. I think they were trying to do a James Hong
kind of thing.
You know, Big Trouble in Little China, right before this. And I think Hong wisely just said, fuck you.
Yeah.
He's read the script. Or if that is if they offered it to him at all.
Now, in that messenger exchange, you mentioned Kevin James. You had written with the impression that it was a remake should star Kevin James.
Yes.
The dog chase.
What's that?
The dog chase was so Kevin James.
Yes. Yes. I mean, they could make this the next Paul Blart Mall Cop easily. Yeah. That was so weird, the dog chase. Mm-hmm. Like, to say the dogs were just so intelligent, but not smart enough to bark at his presence to alert the humans.
Yeah.
None of that made any sense. It was weird. It was probably one of the most interesting parts of the film, actually. But it still didn't make any sense. And then rats in the pants on top of that?
What was that? I was actually... My attention had wandered at that point. I was in another tab. So I come back and wait, he's pulling a rat out of his pants? What?
Rats crawled up his pants for some reason.
Okay. I did get a kick out of how he just stayed quiet and let her assume that he was Army intelligence and let her just do all the work for him.
The script is kind of just a series of events
that
happen with no actual logical connective tissue.
Also liked using the henchman's diamond tooth to weaken the glass.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. I could have seen them do that with Jaws, too. I bet that was an idea they had and got rejected
probably
next year.
And I will say, at least there wasn't a romantic subplot. They kind of head-faked a little bit, but they didn't go through with it.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't. They flirted a lot. They looked at each other in different ways, and then they parted in the end.
And even if they had the sequels that they were looking for, I doubt they would have brought her back.
No. They were probably going to do the whole Bond thing where it's a different woman in each film.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest thing, you know, I get the excuse of using the Statue of Liberty in the film, but how did the bad guys know he was going to be at the Statue of Liberty at that time?
Yeah.
None of that made any sense. Like, they just happened to be at the Statue of Liberty, and then the bad guys just happened to spot him at the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could just... I felt like Scott Evil. You could just take a sniper, you know, weapon and just, you know, plug him full of holes, and that's the end of him. No, they hire these construction weirdos that decide, yeah, we can fight this government agent or whatever.
Oh, that Tommy Shaw video I was talking about?
Yeah.
It's basically just him and his band playing on a set that looks very much like that Statue of Liberty set, interspersed with a few clips from the movie. Very, very 80s.
Oh, yeah, the movie soundtrack video was probably like the easiest video to make because they just borrowed some clips from the movie.
Well, no, the actual video did show Tommy Shaw and his band in a similar set. There's another video, I actually accidentally watched this one first, that's just clips from the movie. That was a fan thing.
But you remember, though, the 80s, you're telling me they didn't use any clips from the movie, they just had the set?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because usually you get, like, you know, the studio pays for the making of the video, and it's just them on a set, and then there's a few clips...
Right.
Cut in for and no I think reason.
It was probably just a song written for that album that they borrowed. Probably, you know, the record company and the film company had a deal. Maybe common owner.
Just think of some of those weird videos, like, what was it, the Rod Stewart movie video with, like, the Daryl Hannah movie?
Oh, right,
Robert Redford.
Yeah.
It's like, why? What was, who was watching that video going, oh, yeah, we gotta see this, man. But back to this, unfortunately.
Sequels and remakes?
Yeah, sequels and remakes.
In 2014, Sony Pictures hired director Shane Black, a fan of the book series, to begin work on a script by Jim Ulls and the Destroyer series co-author James Mullaney. In a 2018 interview, Black said that the project was still very much in play, and he planned to work on the script with Fred Decker and Mullaney. He praised Mullaney's books in the series as equal to those of Warren Murphy and Richard Safier, the authors who originated the series.
So, this could probably work in more capable hands.
Oh, yeah. I'd be curious to see it. On to Brains.
On to Brains.
And I said it's the most generic movie I've ever seen, so I'm going right down the middle, 2.5.
None of this made any sense, and may God have mercy on their soul. I'm going 1.
And what have we learned?
We learned that dogs and rats can work together.
And I learned that mediocrity can be its own kind of brilliance.
That's overselling this.
That's it for Remo Williams. Until next time, and we'll be reviewing Gilbert as a tribute to the late, great Gilbert Gottfried, who passed away yesterday, yeah. I believe it was.
Yeah, well, I think it was yesterday. That's when we at least learned about it yesterday. Yeah.
So yesterday did some research, found a tribute movie, so we'll be doing that next week. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.